You're listening to the Whack Hoops Digest Podcast with Kyle McDonald.
Hey, everybody. It is another episode of the Whack Hoops Digest Podcast. Kyle here with two beat writers, my buddy Tyler, who is a contributor to Whack Hoops Digest, Andrew McCullough, Monitor News down in, what do you want to say, the Rio Grande Valley, I guess you could say.
And, probably the best.
Yes. An Inland Sports senior writer, Daryl Trujillo, out in Riverside, California. We're going to have a little roundtable tonight. It is Thursday night, about 9 o'clock Mountain Time. Just a little roundtable with some of the news that happened today around the WAC with expansion, with, you know, adding new teams, adding football. I have to talk a little bit softer in this podcast episode because I have a three-year-old that's asleep, and my wife has already made notice of it that I have to talk softer, so forgive me. Anyways, guys, you know, let's start off with Andrew. Andrew, what were some of your thoughts from today's press conference that took place in NRG Stadium in Houston?
I thought the location of it was pretty telling, right? I mean, you kind of just alluded to it there, but I thought it kind of made a statement that they did that not only in Texas, welcoming four new Texas schools, but did it specifically at NRG, which is where SFA and Sam Houston State play their football rivalry game every year, the Battle of the Piney Woods, which is one of the marquee FCS football rivalries. So I thought that kind of said a lot about both in terms of messaging and just the direction of the conference moving forward. The local angle here, both in the Valley and Texas just broadly, is that obviously with today's news, the WAC becomes the biggest conference in America in terms of the number of Texas schools, going from one to two to now six in a pretty short window of time there. And from the local perspective, in terms of just UTRGV also, it's kind of big for them because you went from having essentially the way they like to break it down is bus games versus plane games, right? And you went from having no bus games in the WAC to now having what looks like it might be an almost all busable schedule, which is certainly a pretty big development for people in these parts.
Daryl, what did you take away from today and all the, I mean, you were in a lot of the press conferences as well. What did you take away from, you know, the announcement with the expansion, but also what you took away from athletic directors or presidents that you heard in those press conferences?
I was very excited to see the expansion come through. I mean, I was curious to see what was going to happen after losing Bakersfield and UMKC at the end of the academic year. And Commissioner Hurd and company hit a home run with these additions. Solid athletic institutions all the way around. Divisional play really excites me. And something that New Mexico State's AD, Mario Moshia, said earlier was, we don't consider our ticket punched on a yearly basis. We go and earn it. And they're certainly going to have to earn it with the quality of men's basketball institution that's coming into the WAC next year.
Ty, let's talk a little bit about some of the rivalries that are going to be, I don't know if I want to say renewed, because Utah Valley's played Southern Utah a little bit. Dixie State has been in the same conference as California Baptist, and all those Texas schools have really played each other. But like, how awesome is it to have these, like Andrew was saying, the bus trips to these rivalry games where whenever the fans can be allowed in, it'll be those arenas will be rocking. Let's be honest.
Absolutely, Kyle. And I think it's great for the conference because you renew the local battle between Southern Utah and Dixie State when fans are allowed. You know, you're going to see Dixie fans making the trip up to Cedar City. You're going to see Southern Utah fans making the trip down to St. George. It's an hour drive. And like Andrew was saying, the Texas schools are all busable, you know, so then you create marketing opportunities. You can bus students. You get those arenas rocking. And it's just, it's a big win for the conference as a whole. And especially the Texas schools. I just love that we've got, I believe Andrew was saying, six Texas schools now in the WAC. And that's big time. And I think I saw something somewhere else too, that three Utah schools in the WAC. So that's also the leader in the nation as well. So you've got the most amount of schools from Utah and Texas. So all in all, it's a big win for the conference. I'm excited to finally have the rumors in the past now. It's official. We can move forward with it, and there's lots to be excited about.
Well, to be honest, there's still one rumor out there that they're going to add another school that has football. So that's one thing they're looking into still, is that they're going to add one more school that has football now. You know, the news came out today that UTRGV has decided that they want to start football. Now, I got it pointed out to me a couple of times on Twitter that there's a difference between actually starting, saying you're going to start it, and following through with it. So, Andrew, what is the news on that you've heard?
For sure. It's kind of a nuanced distinction, right? They have, the way I'll put it is, I asked Chase, the AD at UTRGV, Chase Conk, earlier today, essentially what you just asked me, and his point was kind of like you were saying, an AD or a university president kind of can't just unilaterally decide to start football on their own. There's kind of a process you have to go through. Yeah. So today was, I guess, the beginning of those conversations in earnest. And I guess I'll add the caveat too. UTRGV has done a feasibility study in terms of bringing football down here in the past, although that study is about 3 years old at this point. And one of the distinctions they made today is the last time they did that study, there wasn't a clear path forward, so it was kind of tabled. And also that study was more looking at the possibility of starting an FBS football program. And obviously joining the WAC would be an FCS level program. So that changes the calculus to a certain degree, and not only makes it more feasible with this very doable schedule in terms of you know, distances to travel and having teams to play already, but it certainly changes the financial calculus too, both based on the cost you would have to incur to get a program started and the financial benefits once you actually get there. Although I do think, just based upon the interest level here locally and, you know what I mean, the ample recruiting areas both here and near here, I think it's probably safe to say that there's going to be a great level of interest in starting up football down here. So I don't think that's the piece that will hinder them, so to say. I think if there's anything that slows it down, it would just be the financial aspect and trying to make those pieces fit.
And let's be real here too. GCU not adding football, Utah Valley not adding football anytime soon. I confirmed that with athletic director Jared Sumption when I talked to him today. So fans that think that that's going to happen, just nip that in the bud, because it's not happening. UTRGV is the only current WAC school besides Dixie State and Tarleton State that's saying they're going to add football. We'll see if it comes to fruition, but that's where that stands. Daryl, let's talk about – go ahead.
Sorry. Likely timetable for that too, like the earliest UTRGV would probably be able to add football, we'd be looking at the fall of 2023 or the fall of 2024 potentially. So the WAC will begin playing football, whether UTRGV decides to or not, before UTRGV is actually able to put a program on the field.
And that's why they're looking to add – well, that's one of the reasons they're looking to add another school right now that has football, because I believe it's because they need to have another school in order to have that automatic qualifier to the FCS playoffs. So something to pay attention to. Daryl, let's talk about basketball-wise, how this is going to impact the current WAC as it is, to bring in a Stephen F. Austin, Sam Houston State, Abilene Christian. I mean, who is it? Stephen F. Austin and Abilene Christian are both in the College Insider mid-major top 25 right now. Stephen F. Austin had a huge upset at Duke. Was it last year, a couple years ago? Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about the benefit that it's going to be for the WAC.
Yeah, I think it's a huge benefit. And I mean, you kind of touched on it right there. I mean, Stephen F. Austin in particular is a program that I think in these past couple of years has gained some national attention. They've had not only a couple NCAA tournament appearances, but a couple NCAA tournament wins on the basketball side. I had the opportunity to see Sam Houston State play UTRGV earlier this year and last year, both really good games. I think that Bearcats team is really solid, and Abilene Christian's another really competitive team. I mean, I think these are four Texas schools where if they were in the WAC this year, at least the majority of them would be legitimate conference title contenders. I think maybe with the exception of New Mexico State, all these teams could at least hang with every current basketball team in the WAC. And this kind of also, I guess, relates to something Commissioner Hurd, was saying earlier about raising the national profile of the conference, both in a basketball context and I guess just broader, right? They mentioned the media rights deal for the conference expires at the end of the year too. And I think this basketball angle definitely has to play a big part in that, because kind of like you were saying, SFA and Abilene Christian, those are nationally recognized mid-major schools on the court. And you know, whenever they were talking earlier today about being one of the nation's marquee mid-major conferences, I think those are the types of names that really help you get there.
Daryl, what are your thoughts on all that?
He's absolutely right. And I just want to point out that Abilene Christian in the 18-19 year was one of three programs that had both their men and women's teams win conference tournament titles and reach the NCAA tournament. So, I mean, that's a proven add for the WAC in basketball on the women's side, too, to augment a really solid women's side of the Western Athletic Conference.
Talk about, I want to ask you about, Daryl, I don't want to say this. I lost my train of thought. I had a question and I can't remember for the life of me what I was going to ask. It was basketball related too, so I'm not sure where I was going with it. Oh,
well, real quick aside, just to kind of add on to what we were talking about there, I think these five schools that the WAC brought in today really help facelift the conference in terms of baseball also. I mean, Sam Houston State, SFA, and Lamar in particular are all really competitive baseball programs. Those are teams who in midweek series pretty regularly play, Big 12 schools and teams like A&M, Texas Tech, UT, TCU, Baylor, you know what I mean? Teams that have a national profile. And when you get a couple of those midweek wins as a conference, it really helps elevate your profile. And I know that's something UTRGV has tried to do similarly, but I think it's going to be a lot easier for not just the Vaqueros, but those other schools also to schedule those games with now this identity as a big Texas conference.
Right, right. I think it'll make the conference better as a whole. I mean, adding those four schools, Lamar is kind of on the fringe, but the other three are top. Like I was telling Jared Sumption today, the WAC added three top tier mid majors. They didn't just add the scrubs of the conference. They added good teams, quality teams that are going to make their conference better. Ty, I want to ask you, GCU president Brian Mueller talked about how they want to be the Gonzaga or want to be like Gonzaga and how they're investing so much in their basketball program. Well, let's put it this way. They haven't been able to go over the New Mexico State hump, right? And they haven't been able to – and let's put it this way. Stephen F. Austin, Sam Houston State, and Abilene Christian are no scrubs. They're comparable to GCU or even NMSU right now. Do we see the Lopes pulling off a major coup and winning the WAC at any time soon with these new schools coming in?
You know, it's tough to say, because since they've entered the league, I believe their first year was 2013 and 14. They've progressively gotten better and better. And then it felt like in those final years of the Dan Marley era, they kind of topped off a little bit and they started to decline a little bit. You know, they made the final, I believe it was in back-to-back year, 17-18. And then 18-19. Yeah, both years in the semis took down Utah Valley and just really weren't competitive games in the final against New Mexico State. So it showed that they still had a ways to go. And then last season, the wheels just completely fell off for the Lopes. So with Bryce Drew, you know, they're looking to quickly bounce back, but it was tough for them the first time, and it's going to get a lot tougher with the additions. Can I look into the future and say that they'll win it? No. Do they have a shot? I think absolutely they do. They've got one of the great young coach in Bryce Drew, who had some success at Vanderbilt before things fell through there. So they've got a great coach. They've got a great foundation, a great program, one of the best arenas and student sections in the country. They've got the money. It's going to be tough, though. So We'll see. I expect them to continue to be a top three or four team, but I'm not sure if they'll make that jump.
What did you guys think when he said, you know, GCU president said that they weren't going to do football because they're really riding this basketball thing to make their brand known and make their university known?
That wasn't a shock. It's just not easy in this era to start up a new program, let alone football at a high level, even at the FCS level, and do it right. And we all know the GCU alumni donor base is heavy into basketball. And it's like he said it absolutely right. Their donor base is into basketball. And for them to start football would have detracted some resources that they are away from the basketball side of things in their pursuit of WAC championships and NCAA tournament berths and all those things.
I think it's tough as well, because if you look at it, you know, Arizona State and their, you know, powerhouse football program just down the road in Tempe, then you go an hour south in Tucson and you've got Arizona. And so it's tough when you have two really passionate fan bases around their football programs, you know, that are within an hour of your campus. And that's kind of the similar situation for UVU. With BYU just down the street, BYU's got, you know, a national following. So it's tough to garner any following for that football program. But like you said, Daryl, they're so invested in basketball that it's like, why would we try football when we've already got stuff rolling for basketball?
Here's a question for all of you to answer. Do you think that at some point we're going to get to a point where football becomes the alpha and the basketball school, the non-football schools, kind of get left in the dark?
Kyle, are you asking basically if we have another split based on the football, non-football line?
I think it's an honest question to be asked, because, I mean, are the football schools, here's the thing, with those guaranteed games, with bowl games, with playoffs, whatever they have in the FCS, and let's say potentially they go FBS, okay, they become an FBS conference, because that's been discussed, right? There's feasibility study that's going to be done to see about that. But the money that football can bring in sometimes is, I don't want to say it's more, because you get a lot of money from your team going to the NCAA tournament from your conference representative. But, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made in football. Will those football schools be willing to split that with the rest of the conference? Or let's say basketball or non-football schools, let's say a GCU or Utah Valley or California Baptist wins the WAC, are they going to want to split the revenue that they get from, you know, the NCAA tournament with football schools? Like, there's a dynamic here that I would assume we have to pay attention to, because a lot of conferences, those kind of problems are what cause the splits.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if it stays at an FCS level, which at least looks like it'll be the case for the near future or foreseeable future anyways, I think maybe a good comparison would be the Big 12, in the sense that that's a conference on the football side that's really dominated by Texas and Oklahoma, but on the basketball side, it's really more the Kansases and the Baylors who are in it every year. And I think that could kind of be a similar dynamic in the WAC. We'll just stick to Texas schools for the sake of this comparison. But Stephen F. Austin, of the six Texas schools right now, is, I would say, pretty safely the most superior basketball program, just in terms of recent track record and a national profile. And on the football side, I would say it's got to be Sam Houston State. That's a team that in the past decade has played for a couple FCS national championships. But that's actually kind of a good example, because those two schools are rivals and they've been in the same conference and sort of coexisted along those lines. You know what I mean? With one sort of dominating one sport and the other. Although I do think if the WAC graduates to the FBS level in football again, then I think things get a little bit tricky. And I think maybe a good comparison for that would be looking back to the Big East before it really disintegrated, because that was kind of a good example of having a league that was half in on football and half out. And you know what I mean? Ultimately, basketball ended up powering that conference in a big way. And I don't mean to be, you know what I mean, condescending when we talk about the football programs in the WAC, but I think right now it's safe to say that the profile of the WAC, at least as of today, is much stronger as a basketball league. So I could certainly see some problems arising down the line if the dollar figures pull more in the football direction, but the results trend more in the basketball direction.
Daryl, you were going to say something on that. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is I could definitely see a scenario, especially if the WAC goes to FBS, where the non-playing members start to look around and start to play around with the thought of forming a non-football conference. I mean, I was talking to one of my buddies out here that thinks that if BYU joins a P5 in football and leaves the WCC, that CBU could jump into the WCC, theoretically, of course.
Yeah, I think that's where my issue lies. I mean, the basketball comparison with splitting the money with football schools is, I shouldn't have thrown that out there because that's not a comparison. But, like, going back to the Big East situation where you got these schools that have football and basketball, but some schools only have basketball, I mean, it that's a huge issue. Look at – it's even happening in conferences that don't have that problem. Like, Gonzaga hates splitting the money with the rest of the conference because nobody else does anything, you know? And I think, you know, that's another reason why the Big 12, like, didn't want BYU because they didn't want to split those – BYU didn't want to, like, give up their rights to the BYU TV for Longhorn Network. There's just so many dynamics here that are going to be interesting to watch. Like, I'm so excited about the expansion. We've gained a ton of new followers on WAC Hoops Digest. Traffic has been crazy on the website, so I'm excited. I'm stoked. But there's some dynamics that we really have to watch with this expansion.
When you alluded to this earlier, Kyle, too, but I think it'll be interesting to see who that 14th school in the WAC eventually becomes, too, because I think that could ultimately play a pivotal role in kind of either leveling the balance of power between the football and basketball schools or kind of tilting it in one direction or the other, depending on who that is.
Tyler, when you saw the map of the new schools, okay, what did you notice about the map, I guess you could say?
There was a lot at the bottom and there was not a lot at the top. Poor Seattle U was just up there all alone. And then you've got a whole lot going on in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. You got some up in Utah, got Cal Baptist down there. And then just poor little Seattle's all alone up there. And something that I saw on Twitter is that somebody mentioned this. I think maybe it might have been Aggie Fanatico. Or I can't remember if it was exactly him, but I feel like he was a part of the conversation where it was saying that you kind of wonder if maybe Seattle kind of becomes the outcast of the conference where they have to fly everywhere now. I mean, they still have to fly regardless, but like they even have to fly farther now. You know, they don't have, I guess you could consider a real rivalry in the conference, you know, so Seattle is just kind of on its own. So I think whoever made the point, I think it might've been Daryl of, you know, non-football members, if they kind of start to explore going rogue, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Seattle do that because now it kind of feels like they're the odd one out now. You know, obviously beforehand it was Chicago State and it's finally happened where they're being kicked out. Thank heavens. Sorry. We love you, Chicago State.
Just to be
State,
nice, just to be nice about Chicago State.
For so long now. Yes, exactly. We love you guys, but you've really been dragging us down. But I would not be surprised if Seattle, you know, kind of started to explore that possibility, you know, especially if there is kind of a shift in power, you know, between the football schools and the basketball schools, you know, and you can maybe even say the same for Utah Valley. I doubt that happens because they've got Southern Utah and Dixie State, you know, the I-15 rivalry, which is something that I know Kyle has been vying for a long time now, you know, get these Utah schools, these smaller Utah schools in the same conference. So it's going to be interesting to see, but like, back to my earlier point, the rivalry aspect of it, I think it's so great. You know, all those Texas schools real close to each other. You know, you're getting in-state games always draw great crowds. So
Tyler,
overall,
I'd
it's
like
a win-win.
Piggyback off of that. If I'm Seattle right now and I'm looking at what just happened and I'm seeing my travel budget probably go up by what, 1.5 would be my guess.
Seattle's travel budget probably doesn't increase, and I thought the same thing that it would, but in reality it doesn't, because they still would have to travel to UTRGV, which they do already, and Tarleton State is already on the schedule, so it's not going to increase to go to Texas. It might actually be cheaper because they can fly into Dallas or Houston directly, and so I just want to clarify that it's not necessarily they're like, I was wrong on that too. I'll admit that, because I was one of those that said their travel budget would go up. But with the fact they already have to go to Texas, it's not going to really go up. But I think there's more opportunity for them to fly into places where it's a little cheaper. Anyway, sorry, Daryl. I just wanted to clarify that. My apologies.
Yeah, and that was going to be my thought too, was try to get yourself more in regional, you know, Northwest area games. And for them, it would be the Big Sky Conference might be a decent fit if they were to think about
it. Yeah, I think
just because, you know, they're basically the lone team in that area.
Right. I think it'd be interesting to watch, because I think there was talk maybe not a long time ago, but there was some talk about getting them in the West Coast Conference, just because they're a religious school and it fits kind of that mold of those schools in there. But I don't know if Gonzaga wants a team from Seattle in the West Coast Conference, which if Gonzaga doesn't want it, it's not happening. So, but yeah, it's interesting how they're the outlier right now in the new conference alignment. Go ahead.
Sorry. You brought up an interesting point there, just with touching on the travel stuff for Seattle. And I mean, maybe there is something that the WAC can work out along these lines, and UTRGV is kind of the outlier in this example, but using the new schools that came in, like SFA, Sam Houston State, Lamar, you know, maybe there's some possibility where Seattle and maybe some more outlier schools like a California Baptist potentially play a road schedule where you're playing those three schools on the road all within a short time period, kind of to cut down on that a little bit. Cause then at least it's two flights and a couple bus trips in between, instead of kind of like you were saying, a crazy amount of crisscrossing the country.
Well, that makes good sense. That's a good point.
Kyle, let me just quickly throw this out there. And I'm just throwing this out there. This is completely speculatory based off of everything right in here, right in my mind. I wonder if maybe there's a possibility that maybe the WAC doesn't add one and they're expecting somebody to leave in the near future. You know, maybe it's just setting up to where Seattle just kind of feels like they got hosed in the situation and they do take off. Maybe they get somewhere into the West Coast Conference. Maybe they get an invitation back to the Big Sky, like you said, Daryl. So I don't think that's the case. I still think the WAC is going to go after another school, but I do wonder if possibly something works out like that in a couple of years where Seattle says, yeah, this isn't working, you know, or maybe another school does, and then they go out. So I don't think that'll be the case, but that might be something to consider as well.
Well, and let's clarify on that too. Chicago State left voluntarily because they felt like that Midwest direction they thought the WAC was going to go isn't happening now that they're moving into the Southwest. That was one of their big reasons for voluntarily leaving. So that's something to keep an eye on as well right now, is will Seattle want to stay in this conference? It's kind of moving in another direction. And so we'll see what happens with that. Let's talk some hoops now. Obviously, this is the WAC Hoops Digest podcast, so we're going to talk some hoops. We have three conference series this weekend. I'm stoked. Last week we had two, but everybody has said that they're clear from COVID testing. So game on. Daryl, we'll start with you. Tarleton State at CBU. Both teams got swept last weekend. You know, what are you kind of seeing with this series starting tomorrow night at the CBU Event Center?
I'm excited for this one. I'll actually be there for the Saturday, the getaway game, I guess we're calling them now. But for me, I'm excited to see who bounces back after a couple of, you know, tough road losses, especially on the CBU side of things. where Utah Valley blew them out by, what was it, 25 in game one, 27, something like that. And then they made it competitive in game two. But we all know the CBU Event Center is a tough place for road teams to come in and get wins. And can this Rick Croy team, minus Milan, hold serve at home court, even their record at 500, and work their way forward from there?
Do you think that having Rick Croy on the sideline this weekend will be a huge difference maker, considering he wasn't there last weekend in Orem?
It's always a difference maker when you're playing without your head coach. But I'm going to take something from my days as a varsity basketball high school scorekeeper for the last decade. In our head coach's last year, he missed two games because of work, or he was coaching water polo too at the time. And our assistant went 2-0, and it was just a different voice, but it was the same message. I'm sure there's a difference between, having Rick Croy on the sidelines and Hardy on the sidelines leading the squad. I didn't get to watch either of those games just because of my regular job, but I'm sure there was a difference in the way, huddles were done and everything else was done that you operate a program with. So having Croy on the sideline, and we all know Rick is a very energetic, animated guy, that could push them over the top against a Tarleton team that's been pretty competitive so far in this first campaign of Division One.
I think the one of the things to keep an eye on this weekend when you're there, how do the CBU guards handle the pressure that the Tarleton guards put on them? Because the Tarleton guards are very good defensively. So keep an eye on that. So again, Tarleton State at CBU, CBU Event Center. Should be fun. Sad that there's no fans there, because the CBU Event Center is pretty rocking when you get fans in that arena. Daryl, you know all too well how that works out.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about
– I was in the building.
Oh, go ahead.
I was in the building for that first game against New Mexico State. I still remember that like it was yesterday.
I have some theories on why New Mexico State canceled their series last weekend against Dixie State, but I'll keep that to myself because conspiracy theories aren't very popular right now. Anyways, let's talk about Dixie State at UTRGV. The Trailblazers coming off a 9-point loss on Wednesday night to New Mexico. First game back in almost 2 weeks. UTRGV just played last weekend against a non-D1 opponent. And the big news was that big man Jeff O'Cherry came back from injury as his first start, played 12 minutes, and had actually a really good game in that 12 minutes. Plus, I believe Javon Levi is going to be playing this weekend too. So, Andrew, break that down for us.
Absolutely. That's a great segue because it was Jeff O'Cherry's first game the last time we saw UTRGV play. It's been a little while, and they were playing St. Mary's, but not the St. Mary's D1 basketball fans are used to. This is the NAIA St. Mary's in San Antonio. UTRGV looked good in that game for what it's worth. I think it was a 29-point win for them on their home floor. Like you said, Javon Levi didn't play in that game, and neither did Quentin Johnson, their sophomore forward, for some personal matters. But kind of unnecessary in that type of game where you figure, you're just more talented than the team across from you. I think those have been their two most consistent offensive players so far this year, though. And neither of those guys have played in several weeks now, going back to probably before Christmas time, since either of those guys saw the floor. So I think there might be a little bit of rust for UTRGV to shake off, at least in this first game on Friday, especially with Jeff O'Cherry really only playing, like you said, 12 minutes in essentially the last year. He's coming back from what I believe is a knee injury. So he did some shoot around work after the game too, and he definitely looks looser than he has. From what I've heard, he's been practicing now for 2-3, maybe almost 4 weeks at this point. He had, I think, maybe a week and a half of practice under his belt before that St. Mary's game. I think the big thing for UTRGV to look for in this game, though, is just, I think, 4 out of their last 7 games have either been canceled or postponed, counting that Chicago State series they were supposed to open up with last weekend that ultimately didn't happen. 2 of their last 3 games are against a D2 opponent and an NAIA opponent. And then that other game was a 3-point loss at home to a pretty good Sam Houston State team. But it's been a while since they've really played a team of their same caliber and class. So I think especially given the way Dixie State played, at least for the first half, against a pretty good New Mexico team earlier this week, I think that should give them, at least in this first game, a little bit of a slight edge. Although, kind of like you were alluding to, Kyle, I think if Javon Levi and Jeff Ocherry are both out there for an extended period of time, that's really going to cause some problems. We've yet to see them play on the same floor at the same time. Well, let me amend that statement. The last time they played on the floor at the same time was last year when Jeff Ocherry was still playing at Stony Brook, and he played against UTRGV. But this will be the first time we get to see them in the same color jersey on the court together. And it'll be the first time this season that we see UTRGV trot out two former defensive players of the year, and they're the only D1 team in America that can claim that. So I think if those two guys are really working well defensively, they're going to be a really hard team to beat because that plays very much into the style of basketball they like to play.
Very true. I want to say I have been extremely high on Jeff Ocherry since I heard that he was coming to UTRGV. So it gives them a rim protector, and the aggressiveness that their guards play with on defense, it allows them to make mistakes because they know they got a guy that can rim protect. And let's not discount Sean Ray, what he has done this season. I know Lou Hill was extremely high on him. So give all credit to Sean Ray and where he's at right now. I think I put him as one of my like top five players in the WAC right now before conference play started. So UTRGV is dangerous. I'm going to say that right now. They are dangerous when they're at full health, full strength. Just keep an eye on the Vaqueros, okay? Tyler, go ahead, Andrew.
I'm so glad you brought up the Sean Ray piece. I'm ashamed I almost forgot about that because he's been playing great this year in the absence of Ocherry and Levi at times. The last time I spoke to him, he told me his ultimate goal for this season is to be in contention for the WAC Player of the Year award at the end of the season. And it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out when he has to share the floor with both of those guys at the same time. Although right now, he really is putting up numbers that would lead you to believe that he's putting himself in that class. I think he's averaging close to a double-double a night, easily leading UTRGV in scoring right now. And I think when you have him and Ocherry on that low block together, it's going to be really hard to out-physical UTRGV in the interior.
Tyler, you wrote the preview for Seattle-Utah Valley this weekend. Seattle didn't play last weekend. They were the team that actually had the open weekend. They didn't have any cancellations. They played a non-D1 team, won pretty big. But, you know, now they get to play conference games against Utah Valley, who's 2-0. Tell me what your preview is all about.
You know, last week for Utah Valley and Cal Baptist, I thought it was going to be – that series was going to be won in the Battle of the Guards. And I think it's safe to say that this week we know what we're getting with the guards. You know, I'm excited to watch Jameson Overton and Riley Grigsby, both similar players, similar height, similar build, both put up about the same numbers. So we know what we're going to get from the guard play of both these two teams. You know, Seattle's got two really good guards, Darion Trammell, Riley Grigsby, Utah Valley, Trey Woodbury, Jameson Overton. But I think really the matchup that not a lot of people are going to watch that I think will dictate the series is the battle of the big guys. And I say that because if Utah Valley's big guys win that battle, I think Utah Valley wins both games. If Seattle's big guys, you know, somehow win that battle, then Seattle wins both games. And the big lingering difference in between UVU's bigs and Seattle's bigs is that UVU's center and forward, Fardos Amak, 6'11", and Evan Cole, 6'10". Then you go over to Seattle, Emeka Udeni and Jared Pierre. Udeni is only 6'6", and Jared Pierre is 6'8". So you've got 6'6" and 6'8" against 6'11" and 6'10". So if Seattle's big guys can outplay UVU's big guys, then I think that the Red Hawks will get it done that easy. That said, that's not an easy task because Fardos Amak, UVU center, leads the nation in rebounds right now, and he's just an absolute machine on the glass. And You know, I've had the pleasure of watching UVU most of their games this season. And the progress that really he's made game by game, Doss, is impressive. And he's only getting better as well. So I think that's where this series will be won and lost, if Seattle's bigs can outplay UVU's bigs. And I think that Seattle gets two wins. If Utah Valley's bigs hold serve like they are expected to do so on paper, then I think Utah Valley will get it done.
Well, let's be real about what Fardaz Amak has done. I think we can all agree, okay, this guy's had two 20-rebound games this year. He's averaging over 15 rebounds a game. That's three more than the number two rebounder in the nation, okay? He's only had one game this year that he's had less than 14 rebounds. That was against BYU in the second game of the season. But every other game he's had 14-plus. Here's the crazy thing, okay? The only reason he had 14 in the game against California Baptist that first night on Friday last week, he got ejected for stepping up and trying to, like, stand up for his
teammate.
We'll
just call it a scuffle.
A scuffle. Okay, a scuffle. But anyways, that guy pulls down rebounds at an alarming rate, and it's amazing. That's the thing about this league right now, and I think we can all agree there's some really good guards, but the bigs in this league are really good as well. I mean, you know, Jeff Wilcher's only played one game, but you mix him with Sean Ray, that's a great combo. Grand Canyon with Asbjorn Midgard and Alessandro Laver, that's a great combo. And California Baptist, Gorjok Gak, I love that guy. He's long, he's athletic, he's quick. They need to get him the ball more, okay? Utah Valley, Amak, and Evan Cole. Huge, okay? I mean, that's what you need to win games is bigs right now. And, I mean, New Mexico State has Donnie Tillman and Johnny McCants. I wish we could see them more. I want to see the Aggies a little bit more. But you look at this conference, and that's what's going to win games is those big guys that can rebound.
Absolutely. I mean, UTRGV, I believe, with the exception of a pretty big blowout loss to open the season against a really good Texas team on the road, I think they've out-rebounded every team they play. And it's really been the difference in them winning a lot of close games, particularly those two against A&M Corpus Christi. And it was a big reason why they were able to really narrow what was a big halftime deficit against Sam Houston State. I think you're right. I mean, I think it's going to take kind of winning the battle on the low blocks, both offensively and defensively, but especially the battle on boards, just given the amount of depth around the league this year.
I agree with Andrew. And I think too, defensively, you know, you look at a lot of the defenses in the conference, and a lot of defenses are anchored by big guys being able to step in and protect the paint. I was looking at UVU's advanced stats on defense a little bit today, and sure enough, Fardaz was the leader, you know, and he was leading by a large margin of the total defensive points or whatever that advanced stat is. But I think that if you have a big guy who can not only anchor in defense, but then get rebounds as well, especially offensive rebounds, if you have somebody who can go in and get an offensive rebound and create a second chance opportunity, you know, a lot of offensive rebounds lead to kickouts, which can lead to threes, you know, and if you've got a good 3-point shooting team and you can take advantage of those, you know, those are momentum shifters in games. Especially close ones, like you mentioned in the game against Corpus Christi A&M. You know, big play really helped down the stretch of that game, Andrew. So, you know, bigs do so, you know, big guys do so much more than I think a lot of people realize, you know. And I think that to where we are in the WAC now, to where we have big guys that are going to help swing these games, you know, and help anchor these programs, I think it's terrific.
Daryl, let me ask you one question. As we follow women's hoops a little bit too, CBU goes to Tarleton State this weekend. Are the Lady Lancers going to come back 12-0 and continue to move up in that College Insider mid-major top 25?
I think so. I don't see a first year, you know, Division I program in Tarleton being able to stop a CBU train that has seemingly picked up a whole bunch of momentum. Minus the losing the first half against UCSD and then that game being postponed or canceled due to testing issues. I see CBU gaining some traction. they'll have a Chicago next week, Chicago State, we hope. And then they hit the stretch in February, NMSU and GCU within a 2-week span. That's going to be the stretch to watch.
I mean, and you have to give them credit for the impressive weekend they had against Utah Valley, who was the preseason pick in one of the polls to win the WAC this year. So CBU women, top 25 College Insider mid-major poll, top 25, 10-0 right now, going for 12-0. Guys, appreciate you being on tonight. This little roundtable we have talking expansion, talking some WAC hoops, previewing some games this weekend. Always a blast. We need to do it more often.
Agreed, Kyle.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure to be back on. I know we'll have a couple big UTRGV series ahead. Hopefully they can get a win or two this weekend because it's kind of tough sledding for the foreseeable future with a series at New Mexico State next weekend. And then the Welcome Grand Canyon here. And that's a series. It's actually going to be played at Burt Ogden Arena here, which is the home of the G League's RGV Vipers, although I don't really know that you can call it their home stadium this year since they're playing in a bubble somewhere else.
Well, you guys, thanks for listening tonight. I don't want to say tonight because I'm not publishing this till tomorrow morning. When me and Tyler get off an airplane, I'm not telling you where we're going, but we'll publish it tomorrow morning when we get off the airplane. It's going to be a fun weekend. Again, guys, listen to the WAC Hoops Digest on the Anchor app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, everything. Follow us at WAC Hoops Digest on Twitter. I don't have notes in front of me, so I don't have everybody's Twitter handle. So I will put that on the tweet when I put it out. Anyways, have a good night, everybody, or have a good weekend. Enjoy some basketball, and looking forward to WAC expansion.